Okay. Beth, can you give me your name and date of birth so we can label the tape internally?
My name is Beth Perry. My birth date is August 29th, 1979.
All right, thank you very much. Just want to explain a little bit about the project so that it's on the video. This is the project called Life During the Pandemic in Kentucky. It is a recording of Kentuckians' experience of immediately before the pandemic hit, or their knowledge of the gravity of it and their experiences up till now. So it will be archived at the University of Louisville. Some of them will be archived at the Kentucky Oral History Commission. If that would happen, I'll send you a release for it being archived there. So let's just go ahead and start. The first question is, can you describe, Beth, who you were and what your life was like prior to your knowledge of the gravity of the COVID virus?
Well, I'm a 40-something single that has been working for in dentistry since 2006. Mm-hmm. I've been with my company for 9 years now, mm-hmm. and just really enjoyed being able to help people through my job. Yeah.
So you are from Western Kentucky, right? Are you from yes. Callaway County, Princeton?
Caldwell County.
Caldwell County. Oh, excuse me. Yeah.
Very, very small town.
Famous. Yeah. So how long have you lived in Louisville?
I've been in Louisville for 5 years.
5 years.
Previous to that, I lived in the Lexington area for 18.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
As soon as you found out the gravity of COVID, how did that affect your professional and your personal life?
So I feel like I'm a little unique in that. I found out about COVID before it really started hitting the United States. I had a friend that was in Taiwan for a very long time visiting uh-huh. his girlfriend. He had to basically rush back. But I also have some friends that work in DC that were privy to some information before it really started coming down here. So mm-hmm. I really was getting a bigger picture of what was going on than what was being explained in the United States.
Wow.
Starting with my job, nothing really started coming down until March. There was a lot of talk, especially working with the public, people come in with their opinions. Very much, I end up being more of a therapist a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And try to keep myself very neutral in whatever the climate is going on in the world.
Yeah.
It was very downplayed, especially with my job. Even had coworkers and, you know, patients alike talking about how the flu is a coronavirus. And, you know, one of their sons had even come down with a coronavirus. It just was not given the severity that it really played into be.
Yeah. Well, did you feel at any time that you were at risk at work?
I always feel like I'm at risk. Just my job in general. Using universal precautions and treat everyone like they have some type of deadly disease.
Sure.
And I'm not one to usually get sick, but even with all of the PPE requirements pre-COVID, there were a couple of times that I came down with a couple of things that I know for sure came from patients that I worked on.
And right.
You know, not like that I wasn't wearing a mask or I didn't wash my hands, you know, a million times a day. It's just, you know, the severity of being able, how things are contracted, you just really don't know.
Did you have to take any kind of stepped up precautions?
So yes and no. With universal precautions, as far as keeping things clean and keeping yourself protected, those really have not changed. The community areas are what has really changed. Again, because I was privy to some things that people in Taiwan were doing, we started implementing different things in our communal areas before things started coming down from my company. So uh-huh. For example, we have alcohol spray bottles, you know, positioned pretty much everywhere in the office. So we were constantly spraying down doorknobs, light switches, cabinet doors that only employees touch. So it's more on that really started changing. You know, we, you know, clean the lobby constantly, but it was take out all the magazines and anything that anybody that is shared touches, and wiping down the countertops more often than, you know, previous to that. We do
people wait in your waiting room, Beth, or do you call them from the car or what?
We have a couple of different ways that things go. Our office is a very large beast. We have 3 doctors, you know, 6 hygienists. We have 25 employees. So we are really the size of 3 practices.
Uh-huh.
So our lobby is quite large. We're able to put 4 people in there and keep them socially distant. But I also work at, you know, a mall. So I've had to consider all the riots that have coming in, and we've had to also take into not only COVID, but the different riots and, you know, problems and issues that have arose in Louisville. Mm-hmm. So we can fit 4 people. We do not keep the door locked before the most recent riots when they came out with the decision with the police officers with Breonna Taylor. But because the mall got broken into during the first round of riots, we didn't really feel it because we're a dental office. We don't have anything that anybody wants. You know, we don't keep any pharmaceuticals on hand. You know, we don't have anything. But people next door to us got broken into. The jewelry store that's behind us got completely wiped out. So we've had lockdown protocols because of those issues, but not necessarily because of COVID. Yeah. So if we have more than 4 people in the lobby, we do require that people wait in their cars. We do not let anyone that is over 18 have anybody with them. Unless you are geriatric and require, you know, assistance getting in and out of your chair, or, you know, you have a POA or any of the requirements, like if you need a translator. But even then, we are limiting it to 1 person, and that person has to stay masked the entire time, and they have to stay in their room. We really don't have a lot of people walking around. Our company has been really big on kind of being a tour guide, so you don't really have patients wandering around or knowing not knowing what the next step is. We've stepped that up a little bit to where, I mean, it sucks to escort somebody to the bathroom, but to make sure that there's nobody there waiting, you know, just do a, you know, let me check it out and make sure that you can stay distance away from people.
Yeah. And I think unlike other practices, you told me that you all never shut down.
No, we did not. So our company went down to 5 offices for the entire area. With us being one of the largest ones and having some of the most people that were willing to stick around, we stayed open for emergency purposes only. We also had all of those offices that were shut down. They were feeding us PPE.
Wow.
They were feeding us emergency patients. I mean, it was very much a group support to make sure that our practice stayed open. I also do all the ordering for our office. So it got very stressful very quick.
Yeah.
With protocols changing, you know, on the daily.
And PPE for a while was hard to get, wasn't it? Or did y'all have an easy time?
Very hard to get. And honestly, we still have difficulty getting certain items. A lot of our order companies have put limitations. And even though we're a large company that orders, you know, several thousand units of things from them, it still can be difficult to find stuff.
Yeah.
We've had to outsource to, you know, several different new companies. And it's still pretty difficult. We have limitations on the amount of things that we can order. So, like I said before, I've got 25 people in our office. You know, our front desk people started wearing gloves. You add that into the fact that we were ordering, you know, 700 boxes of gloves a month, and they say we can only get 10 a week.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
level 3 masks are pretty hard to come by. We've had basically a national shortage on the biggest thing that I really think about is the disinfecting stuff. So like the sprays and the wipes, there's just been a national shortage of it. So not so much on, you know, gowns and gloves, because even though, you know, instead of ordering 1 time a month, I'm having to do it weekly now, those things are still trickling in enough to keep us going. Mm-hmm. But there's constant the times that I just order stuff knowing that it's on back order, crossing my fingers that we get at least a partial of our order before we run out.
Well, I'm going to ask you more about this later, but I do want to ask you, I mean, do you think that's a problem as a result of politics and how things have been handled, this idea of PPE being so short?
The limited knowledge that I have about it, I completely agree. There's also, you know, the mass hoarding that went on when things started coming down. But I mean, the lack of preparation for watching other countries and how they had to deal with this and the things that were missing, I mean, it trickles down to the smallest level. I mean, just like me in dentistry, just trying to have a set of gloves to use on a patient or to clean up a room or have the right mask. I mean, having the normal guidelines for mask wearing is a new one for each patient.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to wear them when we're in the building at all because we are actively creating aerosols in dentistry. Anytime we pick up a drill, we pick up the wand, we are creating an aerosol, especially with hygiene, which is why they completely shut hygiene down for, you know, 3 months before they could figure out how to bring them back safely.
Yeah.
But we still don't know how long it stays in the air. We still don't know, you know, if it's recycled.
That's where all the studies are right now in terms of that. Yeah.
You don't know how it's, you know, recycling through the air conditioning system. And we've got 13 rooms. So that's 13 people every hour, if not more, that we are, you know, aerosoling their bacteria into the air.
So how do you feel about that? Do you feel relatively safe or do you feel like, and are you getting tested regularly?
So my company does not require any testing. They do some regulations that if, you know, you have any symptoms, we're temperature checked every day. We have to answer questions. We are monitored, but physically be tested, they have not required any of that. But we do have
I'm surprised by that.
I am very surprised by that too. And actually a little disheartened in my company because there's so many different testing facilities that they could partner with to come in and do the testing. I have a friend that is in physical therapy and she gets tested twice a week now. She does have a part of her, you know, therapy group that decided to accept COVID patients. They keep them separated and have done a pretty good job. Yeah. And I'm assuming that because of that, you know, decision is why they implemented the testing. But I mean, there are so many different places that I've looked that talk about the most dangerous jobs. Number one is a respiratory therapist. Number two is a hygienist. Number three is a, and number four is a dentist. So you've got three people working in the dentistry field that we have the most dangerous jobs for contracting it. So it's just, it's very strange. But I learned early on that for my own sanity, I needed to be tested. For a long time, because I live alone, I wasn't really around anybody, and I'm a very social person.
Yeah.
I had a game night group that, you know, every Thursday there would be a group of, you know, 2 to 20 that would show up. And we would, you know, play games and just congregate and have some fellowship.
Yeah.
So I've started, I think in April, as soon as I can start getting constantly tested, I get tested every week. So I only work 4 days a week. As soon as I leave on Thursday, I drive and go get tested. And I've been to, I think, 6 different testing locations because they'll get full or, you know, when they first started testing, it would take a week to get your results. Well, you had to get your results before you could sign up for another test. So
Now are you having to pay out of pocket anything for that or is it?
Not at all. No, most of the testing has been free. The ones that have not been free, my company has been, they upgraded our insurance to cover any type of COVID testing whatsoever.
Well, at least that's a good thing.
I did, and they also
blame you for not going to go untested. I mean, it's just So, but in your personal life, have you been able to now the weather is well, it's cold now, but throughout the summer, have you been able to like meet people in the parks, and or are you shied away from doing that?
So in the beginning, it really was kind of an all lockdown on all parts because everybody was trying to figure out what was going on. My friend that had works in physical therapy, she and I decided that, you know, we needed to be social. We didn't live that far apart from each other.
Yeah.
And with us being the most dangerous people, we were like, okay, I don't feel so bad because we're in the same position. Contract it. So she and I would, you know, walk 1 or 2 times a week. We started a Marco Polo app, which got us connected with a bunch of our friends and doing, you know, videos. So, you know, we stay connected that way.
Yeah.
My friends that I travel with a lot, we have not been able to see each other at all.
Yeah.
But we started doing Zoom meetings one night a week and started playing internet games. And we just, you know, kind of have a cocktail hour with each other in, you know, D.C., Savannah, you know, Vegas, Pennsylvania.
Oh, making it work.
Yeah, making it work. there's a small core group of people. Much of them were either working from home or were just home with their kids and not working at all. Once we started getting tested, we realized that we needed that interaction. So we keep our group very small, We're also, you know, very open about anything that happens. Hey, our family came into town, we're going to skip this one. But
yeah,
we have been able to, you know, go to each other's houses and have fire pits out in the backyard.
Yeah.
We've done some, you know, dinners where we all bring our own food.
Yeah.
But we mainly stay outside.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, we'll still leave our houses open for, you know, restrooms and things, but we all, you know, wipe everything down. We have, you know, everybody has their own towels and stuff, and just, yeah, you know, keep it as clean as we can. But, you know, my small group, we pretty much decided that we were all in this together and we still needed to be social for our own sanity.
It sounds like remarkable self-therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been able to go home to Caldwell County?
I went one time. And my parents were asking me, you know, what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. And I was like, look, I let's not plan anything, because I may show up, be totally uncomfortable, and then drive right back to Louisville. You know,
right.
I don't know what I'm going to be getting into. I want to see you. You know, I have my own thoughts and feelings about things that are going on. Mm-hmm. Caldwell County is, being in such a small town, it's very untouched.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been that way my whole life. I mean, I can remember even in, you know, middle school and high school, fashion trends taking 10 years to get to Western Kentucky.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, I totally understand their mentality. But it was very much like things were just untouched. I didn't see very many people wearing masks. I went out one time with my parents to lunch. And I thought the place that we went did a really good job of, like, separating people and making sure the tables weren't close. But I had a friend from high school that came up and gave me a video hug. And I was just like,
oy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the people that I did see wearing masks were people that I knew got out. You know,
they
had children that lived in other states. They, you know, constantly traveled or, for the lack of a better term, we're just a little more educated on the way the world works and not just secluded in their small town.
You feel like your mom and dad were in sync with you in terms of compliance?
Yes and no. My dad's very stubborn, just like his dad, and I mm-hmm. got a whole lot of that in me too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they kind of get it, but they still let their small town politics come into it. You know, I very much agree. I mean, especially with the riots and stuff that have come around, you know, from where I work, I'm not going to walk around and be afraid to go take the trash out. I'm also not going to make stupid decisions and, you know, walk around with a Fendi purse walking in my car at night. Like,
right.
But I'm not going to live in fear. And
right.
I know that that's where they are too.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times I feel like they don't understand the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
I had them over for dinner with my brother-in-law, sister, and niece. My niece had E. coli 2 years ago, so she is still immune compromised and has never been cleared. She's gotten great results from every time they've tested her, but her kidneys are still not strong enough.
Yeah.
You know, she's still in this 1% category, and it's like,
yeah,
how do you explain that to someone that you're not going to gamble 1% with your kid's life? So
yeah,
even snide remarks, unfortunately, especially from my dad, about, you know, wanting to see people, and I'm basically the asshole of the family that looks at them and say, if you want to see your granddaughter, you're going to have to wear a mask. You know,
exactly.
If you want to be around the family, you're going to have to wear a mask. You know, stop posting pictures on Facebook of you know, standing next to people in a picture. And then my mom would say, well, they only took their masks off for the picture. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. And I know that in their eyes, they're doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
But again, it's very much a land that is just untouched. I mean, they had 3 cases until a month and a half ago. And then, you know, my mom told me that somebody had a big revival or some sort. I don't know. Information, but it brought a lot of people from out of town, and then Caldwell County became a red zone.
Yeah, I think I remember that on the news, actually.
Yeah. My mom has a friend that is not from the United States that has been telling her different things that have been going on around the world, and my mom told me one day, she says, you know, everything that this lady has told me has come true. So
yeah.
Mom's wearing a mask, you know, she's using the alcohol spray bottle, I mean, mm-hmm. she's doing what she can, but my dad is actively traveling around the state running for an office and a mentor.
Yeah.
And my grandfather is 94 years old. who is, like I said before, just as stubborn as the rest of us, and he'll wear his mask, but he also doesn't want to, you know?
Yeah.
But I totally get it. He's 94. He can do whatever he wants to do whenever he wants to do it. If I've been on the earth that long, then by all means. But at the same time, I've looked at my dad and I've said, if he gets COVID, I'll never forgive you. And I'll never forgive myself if I was a part of that.
Exactly.
And I don't want to live with that, you know? And that's what really drives my motivation to be hard on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They think that they're not going to get it, even though they're in their 70s. And they're both fairly healthy, would probably, you know, be okay. But, I mean, even though my 94 grandfather is healthy, he's by himself. And they would be the ones taking care of them. And it's like, what's going to happen if all three of them go down?
Exactly. Or when your niece has to go back to school. You know, that's a very difficult thing.
That's been a big topic of conversation lately because Jefferson County sent out a request wanting to know, you know, would they go in person or would they stay, you know, NTI because they're giving them the option. And, you know, my sister and brother-in-law are, again, weighing pretty heavy on that. Claire wants to go back to school. I get it. She wants to see her friends, but at the same time,
of course,
how are you going to gamble with that 1%?
Absolutely. It's a very difficult decision. And if one of you all get COVID, then you can't see her. Your mother, she can't see her. Right. At the same time, you know, I've got grandkids right now. They go back to school and there's a COVID problem. Then they can't see me because you just have to take precautions. It is just very difficult.
Right. It's a double-edged sword no matter what you choose. You know, I mean, I had a hard time deciding to stay on at my job because there were 9 people in my position and we only needed to keep like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So it really was process of elimination, you know, being one of the supervisors and, you know, they're kind of my people that I even want to take care of the most. I mean, I have one that is, you know, immune compromised. I have another one that had really small children at home that her, you know, husband was very upset if she decided to stay. I had another one that was working part-time and just didn't want to take the risks of it, you know, so I let all of them make their choices first.
Yeah.
And looked at, you know, what are we really doing with this? And the main doctor that I worked with, he said, you know, I just want to keep people out of the hospitals that don't need to be there.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a really great way to look at it.
And it is a great way, but they're difficult calls to make, aren't they?
Right. Oh, I mean, 4 weeks into it, I mean, we were all losing our minds and just walking around like zombies. I mean, we were only working 4-hour shifts, you know, stacked in the day and no overlapping. But at the same time, it's like in that 4 hours, we were seeing 15 new patients. We're constantly seeing people that are just in pain, wanting to get out of pain and having to make decisions, them being immune compromised, coming into one of the most dangerous places, you know. And then my doctor kept looking at us and he's like, why are you guys having such a tough time? And I was just like, you come in for a few minutes and then you leave. You know, they're not telling you that, you know, their mom is sick or they're worried about their kids or their kids are driving them crazy because they've been home from school and, you know, or, you know, they've been dealing with this pain for so long and then COVID happened and they decided they couldn't take it any longer. You know, we were constantly bombarded with, you know, questions about what we were doing and how we were doing things. And even though we were actively scared and still, you know, just trying to do our best, you've got to look like you're in charge and you know your stuff to try to get people to calm down.
Yeah.
So,
well, in a way, you're almost like a first responder, Beth. I mean, you know, really on the front line. I mean, really. And my hat's off to you because that had to be a very stressful time, and to some extent, it continues to be stressful. And I certainly do give you kudos for getting tested on your own.
Well, thank you. It's like I said, it's really offered me more peace of mind. I was able to take off the week before my birthday this year and just go. I travel constantly, even if it's just for a weekend, because I only work 4 days a week. So I'm constantly seeing my friends that I don't see. And some of them had a beach house in Delaware that they had been quarantining there. The mother-in-law owned the house. She's immune compromised, but I've known her for 20 plus years too. And she said, get a test and come see me. So
those are common sense ways to really tolerate this period. I Yeah, I went on a trip myself, and we did Airbnbs, and where you didn't see anybody. You did a keypad, and you know, we went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and went over to Minneapolis, and it just was the perfect getaway. I mean, you just need to get out of here sometimes.
Right. I just needed to be someplace else for a little while. Exactly. I have a friend in Pennsylvania that she's been working for the government and has been working at home in quarantine the whole time. So she said, come on over. So I took the week and took that beautiful drive to Pennsylvania, stayed a couple of days with her, went to the beach. They had a private beach that was like 4 blocks. And it was literally one of those pictures that you see where like, here's the line, here's the 1,000 people, and then here's like 20 people in this 4 block radius. So yeah, I mean, it felt great. I felt bad for those other people, but at the same time I was like, okay, I feel comfortable. Like I took the
golf course. Sorry about you guys.
Parked in the private spot, you know, didn't see anybody on my way down, you know. it was great. So
that's a healthy attitude though. I mean, really, you gotta take care of yourself so you can do for others.
Exactly. And that this is, I mean, I've always had that in the back of my head, but this has really taught me more of that. Because usually I've been able to, you know, wrangle in my own feelings and, you know, not necessarily shut myself down, but because I'm dealing with, you know, patient's emotions, fear, whatever, I've been able to handle that. But I can remember Mother's Day was really hard for me.
Yeah.
I had a patient that was in the chair and he said, what'd you do for the holiday? And I was sitting there thinking, what holiday? Like, I didn't say anything, but in my head, I'm like, all right, wheels are turning, what's happening? And my doctor was like, oh yeah, you know, the kids made, you know, the wife this, and we had this, and we did this. And I was just like, oh, Mother's Day. And I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, more of the conversation went on and they were like, well, have you seen your mom, Beth? And I was like, no, I've not seen my mom since before Christmas. And it was just one of those moments where I instantly started crying. Like, I wasn't.
I'm feeling welled up for you right now. I'm just listening to you.
It's just tears started rolling down my face. I couldn't control it. And my doctor luckily realized that I was just unable to talk about it. But
yeah,
it is just, that's how high the stress had gotten, that the
slightest,
you know, emotion, it's like, it just, it came out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the week after that, I started telling my boss, I was like, you need to reactivate somebody. I said, we all need a break.
Yeah.
We're all breaking down. I mean, I had a coworker that a patient came in and was rude to her, and she instantly started bawling. And she was like,
yeah,
I'm sorry. She's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be doing this. And I looked at her and I said, it's totally fine. I just went to the doctor a while ago because I'm losing my stuff too. I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
Do what you need to do, you know? I'm sorry if she was mean to you, but feel your feelings, because we've all been having them right here the whole time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The people that you're not activating, are they getting paid or what's their status?
So everybody is reactivated now. We've had full staff since, gosh, days go together for me. So I want to say June or July maybe was when we started reactivating people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dentistry overall has had a mass exodus of people.
Yeah.
So we have 3 positions that are open in my office. 5. 1 got filled, so now we have 4. We've had short staffed anyway. Before COVID, I think we had 2 positions open.
Mm-hmm.
What was the question?
I was asking about the people that were not activated.
Oh, people are not activated. There we go. So, yeah.
I was just encouraging, you know, I'm asking about people that are unemployed, those sorts of things. Yeah.
So our company gave us 2 weeks of paid time off that we could use whenever we want to. They didn't put any limitations or stacks on it or anything. So we could either hang on to it. We had to use it first if we took any time off, but they gave us 2 weeks, you know, just as a gift through COVID. Everyone else, they like temporarily laid off.
Yeah.
Put you, you know, in a waiting hold, and then you were able to apply for unemployment, and they stressed heavily on how to do that.
Well, that's good.
I actually helped several women in my office to make sure that they got into that.
And well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Even the ones of us that were still working, we were not working full time. So we were able to, you know, collect unemployment for what we were missing, and then getting the $600 incentive to help, you know, through all that. So several women that I worked with were making more money being on different. Meanwhile, I was one of those that was stuck in the middle, where the way that they calculate your unemployment is 80% of your gross money has to be less than the $552 a week.
Oh, so okay.
If I worked too many hours and I made more than that, then I got nothing. Yeah. So I still was not full-time, so I'm still not getting full-time hours. You know, I'm getting less than $600 a week, but I don't even get the $600 incentive that the government came down. Now, if I got a dollar of Kentucky unemployment, then I would get the $600 incentive. But if I went a dollar over that, then that's all I got.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of cockeyed, isn't it?
It is. And it's very interesting because I had some of my friends going, oh, you're showing your middle-class white privilege. And I was just like, I guess if that's what you want to call it, where I'm in the middle where, you know, they kind of help you but don't really want to and think that
exactly. It's just, it's these big plans. It's just hard to figure out, you know, the best plan for the most, you know.
Right.
So I've heard a lot of people have zeroed. Oh, $600. People are not going back to work. They're just sitting home and enjoying their $600. I don't really buy into that either, because a lot of those jobs are just not there anymore.
No, they're not there. It's one of those climates that if you want a job, you can get a job. It may not be the one that you want, but if you want to work, you can work. I have a friend. I just saw her this past weekend. She's in Northern Kentucky. She worked for GE since we were out of college, so, you know, close to 20 years-ish, and her department got downsized, and then she had to tell all these people that they were no longer going to have a job, that they were going to, you know, give them a severance package and allow them to apply for other spots in GE, but they just didn't have the room.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of days later, her boss told her, here's your severance package. So.
What about stress?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's large, you know, corporations that are downsizing because there's just not much there. I mean, several of my favorite places are closed that I thought were, you know, wouldn't be in a position to be hurt like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's switch gears a little bit while we've talked about some. Do you think the pandemic has been politicized?
I think it is being used as a political argument. I do believe that. Do I think it's politicized? No, I think it's very real. I think it is, I personally have not been touched by it, but because I'm with the public, I have been with many people that have. I had a patient this last week that had recently recovered from COVID, and she still looked like hell.
Yeah.
You know, and she was 20 days past it and said that she ended up in the hospital. And, you know, my first gut reaction was, did you get a negative test? And
yeah.
She's like, no, you're not required to get a negative test. They don't test you once you've been so many days past, you know, your initial response. And my gut reaction was still like, test. Let me tell you these free places you can go. Please get a test.
I mean, really, really. I guess what I'm saying with the politicization is it being used in the election, for example, by one party or the other to affect the election's outcome?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like any type of buzz topic they're trying to do that with, and COVID being, you know, the number one.
Yeah.
But honestly,
go ahead.
It's like they're just like we were talking about before, it's a double-edged sword. There's no good decisions and no bad decisions. You know, it's something new that, you know, nobody has seen in 100 years. So, of course, you're going to make bad decisions. Of course, you're going to make good decisions, and you're not going to know which is which until after the fact. Is there more that could have been done? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, especially looking at, you know, trends from other countries. I mean, Taiwan is an island off of China, and they are fine.
Yeah.
They are right there, you know.
And what are we, number 28 and dropping?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's crazy. And it's like they have been fine the whole time. I mean, yes, they've done some things that I'm not sure I would have agreed with, but at the same time, their people are safe. You know, I mean, the woman that I talked to that lives there, that is a friend of mine, I mean, she's still thriving. She's still living. They never once shut down her business. You know, they didn't.
You know, some of this is that conflict, though, of the American individualism, which we prize. You know, everybody's their own little island and you can't tell me what to do. Versus the Asian way of looking at things, which is very much more concerned with the group.
Right.
And I mean, that That has been to their advantage, certainly. And I'm not speaking in any way derogatory. I mean, that's very admirable. And something that we usually, you know, admire, this rugged individualism, has kind of been our undoing.
Right. Yep. And I really think if our leaders were just more truthful, I know that they lump everyone into people are stupid. But, you know, I know to quote that the person is not stupid, but yes, people collectively can be. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, give people the information, give people the true information, and then have an open conversation about what you can do about that with the leaders that are involved to make the choices for the groups.
Well, you know? Let's talk about that. How do you think that COVID has been handled at the various levels of government? I mean, start out talking about local, what you know, the state and Governor Beshear, and then the national level. What do you think about those three levels?
I love Governor Beshear. I don't think that he has done everything right, but I know, I just what I said, he has been honest, he has been truthful, he has come out with facts, and he has been following what I think he believes is right in his heart.
And he's taken heat for that.
He has. He's taken a lot of heat for that, but I respect the hell out of him for doing that and for being honest about it.
Yeah.
Whether I agree with some of the stuff he's done or not. And he's even, you know, put forth guidelines, just like with schools. They're not required. He's not requiring to do that, but he wants everybody to be yellow before your county opens up and actually has in-person school. I think that is exactly what I was trying to nail earlier. Give us all the information, give us all the facts,
and then give us
the guidelines that you think we should follow. And when it gets to the point where, you know, we are having, you know, mass problems, yeah, start shutting it down. Start controlling the stupid people that think they don't need to wear a mask or think it's, you know, a hoax.
You know, even some of the Trumpers, you know, people that are for Trump that I've interviewed have actually been supportive of Governor Beshear.
Well, I'll tell you this. My parents came into town and I told them that they could stay here if we all went and got COVID tests, and I'd be happy to drive them to go get a free test.
Yeah.
My dad said, I'm not going to be a part of the governor's numbers. And I'm like, it's not about that. Yeah. Do you want to see your granddaughter? That's what it's about.
Yeah. That's so too bad. Maybe they'll change, because I'll tell you what, this is not over with by any means.
Oh, no. No, we are just now settling into kind of the first wave, in my opinion.
Yeah. So what about the national level? Can you speak anything more about, you know, that level?
More definitely could have been done.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with, in the beginning, the KDA and the ADA coming down with regulations and then those having to match. So we were having to follow not only my company's, you know, guidelines, of course, they're, you know, tapping into those things too, but we also had to follow what the KDA said and the ADA, even if they all did not agree. So it was like, you know, how do you pick, you know, which ones to follow? You know, you basically do everything that you can and then just, you know, hope and pray that you did what you needed to do. But, you know, that whole confusion, I feel like that's been, you know, our national government. It's like we have too many people talking and not enough truthful information coming out, and then not enough, you know, compassion for, you know, the mass population. So, I mean, I have friends in Louisville that are, you know, we're constantly helping out the homeless. It's like, they're not privy to the same information that we have. They don't have the same things that we have. So it's like, how are you, you know, protecting the least of these, you know? Yeah. And it's just not even thought of.
Yeah. That's very difficult. Working with that most kind of population is a very difficult call right now in terms of, well, self-preservation point for.
Right. Right. I mean, and you can even go so far to, you know, illegal immigrants that are here that are constantly working. Well, their jobs got shut down. They have no way to get unemployment. They have no way to make money. And it's like, what do you do for those people?
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a hotline or something that, you know, some of them can call to try to get assistance, but then you go on an ICE list, and it's just like, how do you do that? And it's just, there's not enough.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't know if anybody else in power would have been able to do enough either. I feel like I would be.
But you know, with our country and all the resources we have, it's just so horrible that we've done so badly, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's, I used to think what an embarrassment Kentucky was to be so low on the education level in the United States, to be so low on jobs, to be so low on all these things when we have one of the highest powered, you know, politicians in DC.
Yeah.
He's been there since I can remember. I ate dinner with him when I was a tiny child at my grandmother's table.
Oh, like, my gosh.
I remember him from then, you know? It's like, yeah. He's been in there, but it's just like, what have you done for your state? Absolutely nothing. I mean,
and it sounds like he's got to walk to the next 6 years.
Yeah, you know, and then you keep going up that level, and it's just like, no, nobody's doing enough. Yeah. And we are not only an embarrassment as Kentucky Nation now. I can remember a long time ago before I got into dentistry, my mom was trying to help me, you know, figure out a way to go. And we were standing out on the sidewalk in Princeton talking, and she goes, have you thought about going into the armed forces? And I looked at her and I said, Mom, I am not that proud to be an American. And it floored her. And you know, I kind of said that in a, you know, mom, daughter, riff type situation.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think about those words now and they really do hold true. I mean, I love, you know, all the freedoms that we have, but, you know, I'm a middle-class white woman that gets all kinds of stuff put on me that should not be put on me.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's sad that I feel those words now more than ever.
Well, it's kind of hard to take this attitude. A lot of people have that, oh, America's got the best of everything. You know, we're number one. Because if you know anything about the world right now, as you say, with your connections, I mean, we're not number one.
No, we are far from it. And it's almost like we've had this ruse the whole time that, you know, United States is number one. Well, now we have this world pandemic and it's like curtains pulled back, you know, and it is just a guy with a megaphone saying we're number one.
It's like the Wizard of Oz.
Right, exactly like the Wizard of Oz.
On steroids, I might
add. Right. I mean, I feel like, you know, if I was 20 years younger, if I was hopped up on that kind of steroids too, you know?
Oh, that's terrible. So, Beth, has anything good happened to you as a result of COVID?
Anything good? I'm really trying to search for that.
It sounds like you become good at self-therapy and self-reliance, and also being able to sensibly have a life for yourself and a social life that, I mean, it's very sustaining. I mean, you're remarkable in being able to do that. I've interviewed so many people that are just sitting on their couch bawling a lot of times. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I didn't want to do that, you know? Yeah. I've been, you know, by myself my whole life and nobody's going to take care of me but me. But I had a friend recently give me probably the best compliment. She said, Beth, no matter where you go, you always build a community. And it's been very important to hold on to those and just try to, I mean, it's human interaction is totally worth everything, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's even worth getting COVID if that's, you know, part of your mental health. But I will say because you know, we were not going out all the time and, you know, I haven't been to any concerts or shows or done any of the traveling. I've actually, you know, been able to pay off a lot of debt, do some more, shuffling with my finances, and really, you know, where I wouldn't have taken the time to do that. Clearly I had the time, you know. Yeah. I actually started doing some investing and I started putting more into my 401k and really just, you know, looking at a better budget, you know, because
well, that's definitely a big plus.
Yeah. So that's the biggest thing. Everything else I feel like is just managing a mental state.
That's really important too. Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, let me ask you one thing too, because like me, you live by yourself. I mean, this idea of the loss of physical touch, I mean, that's very difficult to do without, you know, if you were used to hugging people and, you know, shaking hands or whatever.
Yes.
That's hard.
It is. And I will say, about a month into my core little group hanging out, we all ended up at one of the houses and we had a fire outside and I walked up and one of the little girls just came over to me and just bear hugged me. And she said, we decided that we are hugging today. You know, we were like, we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
We're going to hug, you know, and if anything comes up, we'll hope that, you know, you'll respectfully bow out until the appropriate time. And I can remember I got like 10 hugs that day. And it was another one of those moments where I instantly just tears started falling out of my eyes uncontrollably, you know.
Yeah.
So we have our moments, you know. I mean, There's been one family that had a scare because their kids went back to school and they had to quarantine at home, and they respectfully bowed out of one of the birthday parties that we did. You know, we were setting off fireworks and I told them just to drive up in the car and sit in the driveway and then just go home, you know, so they could at least see the fireworks. And she's like, no, I'm too social. I won't be able to stay in the car. I don't want to get out and hug people. But
yeah,
that small little group, we decided that. And I'm very good friends with my doctor. There's a group of friends that they all hang out with, and we would have cocktail hour out in their cul-de-sac. And I can remember going and my doctor coming over to me and hugging me, and his wife going, no, okay, y'all are okay. Because, you know, we work together. We spend all of our time together. Like, we've got the same germs going on.
Yeah. So. You're in the same aerosol after all.
Exactly. We're in the same aerosol. And she was, you know, very much on the nobody else can touch, you know? So I've luckily gotten, you know, some human interaction like that, because I mean, that's my love language.
Of course it is. So, yeah. So 50 to 100 years from now, when historians study this period and try to analyze it, what do you think they'll come up with? What will be their analysis?
We did a terrible job. And could have done better.
Yeah.
And it did not need to be politicized. It did not need to be, you know, a this or a them. It needed to be a human factor.
Yeah.
That is the biggest thing. And my hope that they figure that out.
Yeah. What do you think the new normal will be, like Beth, when maybe the acute phase is over, we've got a vaccine, will the new normal be different?
It's going to be different regardless. I mean, it may be close to something, but I mean, I really don't think so. I think that several things are going to change. I think people are going to be afraid for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think that there's going to be a lot of changes that stick around. I also think that there is probably going to end up being an us and them category, you know, us that have, you know, either had it and gotten, you know, the vaccine, and those that haven't. And I feel like that's going to be an even deeper separation and alienation. I mean, and you're also looking at the groups that we already talked about. You're looking at the homeless, you're looking at the undocumented. I mean, I've got friends that are DACA kids, you know, and where do they fall?
And where do they fall indeed?
You know, and it's just, there's still going to be such a big separation that I don't think there's ever going to be a normal again.
Yeah.
That's
kind of just shattering in a way, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I would love to know and do some more research about, you know, what happened 100 years ago after that plague came through. Like, how did we get to this point in our society, and what was really different before and after?
Well, one thing that was different back then is it really took young people. Young people died in droves. Old people tended to have more of an immunity to it. So the opposite is true now.
Right. Well, and I very much feel like if that was reversed, you know, that the older people would be taking it a little more seriously, you know, instead of, you know, oh, whatever, I'll live through anything, which I get it. You know, the older I get, the more I'm like, whatever. Yeah. At the same time, you know, it's like, I feel like that it would just have a different air about it if it was that case.
That's all my questions. It's been a beautiful interview. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I don't think so. Just, I mean, I hope this helps. And
it helps immensely. And actually, I need more people out of your age group. So if you have anybody else in your friends that would like to do an interview, again, it's not for public. It's for the archives, for, you know, future study. And it's important to get your voices. It really is.
I have several. So I actually talked about it this weekend before we did this, and I have several that would be interested. So
fantastic. Just send their information my way and we'll schedule something. And this has been one of my best interviews. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. If they give anything else, and if I want to, I might even come in and revisit you maybe in 6 months and see how it's going.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you are on the front line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will tell you one thing about the human touch part. That is one way that I calm people down especially, you know, being in the dental chair, you know, just putting a hand on their shoulder, or, you know, taking a moment and just putting a hand on their arm and, you know, talking to them, getting on their level. It's very weird that they can't see my face, you know, all they see is this now. So it's, it's kind of wild, but, I mean, before people would usually be open to it, you know, I mean, just, you know, a kind gesture. Yeah. I've had people now that you can tell that they have not been touched in so long that, you know, me just putting a hand on their shoulder to try to give them, you know, a sense of ease of, you know, I'm here, you know, you're going to be okay. It's they recoil, you know, and it's just, I fear that that is going to be a rift in our society of just alienating us even more from each other. I mean, so many people are in their phones and on electronics, and now we're 100% that way, including this interview.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, taking the touch factor out too. It's like, we're all going to become our own little lonely islands.
Yeah. That's the worst thing, really.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I really do appreciate it. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.